The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Let's go to Ryan. Ryan, good to have you on the show. What's happening?
Hey, so I was just going to talk about some education. Unfortunately, I've put two of my sons through the public school system. Not happy with it. It seems like if they have a D one day, they can bring it up to a B or an A the next day. There's no accountability for it. And we are leaving the state. The state is, I think, too far gone. My youngest son is, we're moving to Southern Mississippi, and we're putting him in a all-boys Catholic school.
So you're not thinking there's any way to reform it within, huh?
No way. There is no way. We've held on for as long as we could. But until I think mail-in voting has changed, the state's never going to change, ever.
Could be right about that. I hope you're wrong. I really do. I hope you're wrong because I love Oregon. Oregon's my home. I may have been born in Pennsylvania, but this is where my heart lies, you know. And I know a lot of other people feel similarly. Appreciate the call, Ryan. Let me go to Steve in Sunny Valley. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I homeschooled my kids. Same program Lynn used. As a matter of fact, she was the tutor for my youngest daughter.
No kidding.
But I also drove a school bus for District 7 for 7 years up until Kate Brown said I had to show proof of the jab to keep my job. That was a litmus test, and the best teachers were forced out at that time.
Really?
It really was a litmus test to see whether or not you would follow orders. We used to get surveys we had to do on our work emails from the Oregon Department of Education. Which is more important to you, diversity, equity, or inclusion?
Okay. So in other words, which Bullstein concept is most important to you, right? Our politicized content. What is most important to you? And there was none of the above, huh?
Exactly. And I had three or four of these kids on my school bus that thought they were something other than what their genome said they were.
Uh-huh.
And they all got dropped off at the women's shelter. They were all going to busted up homes without fathers in the household.
Don't say that that there's not a connection with some of this destroyed family structure. And I know even within my own family, not directly family, but distant family back east, that one of our relatives there, it's amazing. Three kids. All with various levels of, well, if it's not autism, then one is trans, another is gay. It's just, it's kind of like watching a Hollywood celebrity couple coming out and saying, I am so proud of my insert whatever problem there is with their kid.
Right. I think these are definitely a psychological problem, and I think they're induced. I think it's like a mass psychosis in a lot of them. A lot of them are kids just looking for some attention.
And I get it. And what gets you more attention right now than, I mean, is being straight going to get you any attention? Is being, properly wired going to be okay? No. It gets you no attention. But the moment you start,
these kids,
yeah,
they're just confused, and they're great kids. It's not the kids' fault, but it's the society that's letting them emasculate themselves, turn themselves into eunuchs. Chemically castrate themselves, that will affect the rest of their life.
It affects the next generations if there's going to be another generation. The core of all of this, Steve, is that truth is not fungible. Truth is not whatever someone believes.
Exactly. And that's why we have to get Trump to say, okay, Massey, you're my North Star. I understand that principles are important, but we can't do them right now. But you can't go after Massey.
I just would have been quiet about that. I just would have been quiet.
Oh,
yeah.
Jim, yeah. So, anyway.
All right. Steve, appreciate the call. Thanks for making that. Captain Bill Simpson is going to join me here in a few minutes. And we're going to talk about the amazing state religion of putting fire on the landscape. Can we do enough of that? Here's an interesting take on it. We'll kick it around. It's not going to be all about wild horses, okay? Promise you that.
One size fits all, less than an inch.
Captain Bill talks with
me. Open 6 days a week. K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
17 after 8, Captain William E. Simpson of the Wild Horse Fire Brigade, naturalist. Naturalist, is that your official title here? Captain Bill, welcome back. Good to hear from you.
Good morning. Well, I don't know. I'm kind of evolving here.
Oh, you're evolving. All right.
Well, we're teaching wild horse ecology with Cal State now. So,
really,
I guess I'm a teacher's assistant. Yeah, I work under a PhD with Michelle here, and so we actually have master's students coming up from UC Davis and our regular California State students, and
they come up to the ranch and study the
they camp out,
the wild horses
camp out and for a couple. Camp out for a couple of weeks and learn about wildfire mitigation, how the horses reduce the fuel, how they graze differently than domestic horses or livestock because they're not a ruminant. And the wild horses have the ability to go way up. I just was filming a horse on the side of a cliff up here. I mean, he's on ground. I can't even stand up. But he's up there reducing fuel. So,
and we wanted to talk about that a bit here, and you have waxed poetic for years on my show about the ability of wild horses to go into some of these really tough, tight areas and in parts of wilderness and perform nature's lawnmower. It's good. I think that's great. You're expanding, though, a call. You put out an article over on Siskiyou.news about increased wildfires and imbalanced ecosystems, and I guess what you're looking at here, if I'm trying to just sort of get to the core of this, is that our biggest issue that we're facing here when it comes to fire is that everyone talks about the wildfire problem, but most of the wildfires are really wild grass fires. Is that a fair assessment of where you're going and trying to turn to where most of the real damage is going on?
Correct, yeah. All the latest science and, you know, InstaWeb, all the reports, the insurance industry, they're all saying, and then I think it was Yale or Harvard, I get them mixed up, but they've all come out with new reports on the fire forensics out here, and 66% of all these big devastating fires are fueled by grass and brush, not forests, not trees. Mm-hmm. But the emphasis has been burning on, you know, burning, and burning is what U.S. Forest Service does really well. They, you know, you look at these control these fires that these big forest fires, they turn them into controlled burns. You know, if they're going in the right direction, they sort of take their foot off the gas. If it's heading towards structure or community,
then they'll do something about it. Yeah, kind of. Well, this is going back to we will burn the lands for land management purposes, right? When there's a natural ignition of some sort.
Yeah, and fire, Bill, I agree with some of the naturalists that, you know, a certain amount of fire is natural, but we have a collapsed herbivory. That is a fact. And see, nobody is talking about that. Nobody. I mean, you do not hear people talking about the fact that, well, okay, why do we have fire? And they don't know why. When you ask 100 people, why do we have these cases? None of them have the correct answer.
Well, most people, I think, have been trained these days, Bill, to automatically say, well, it's climate change, right? You hear that all the time, right? You'll hear that coming from elected. It's climate change which is doing this. And so buy electric cars and quit putting out CO2, and then we won't have that issue. It's a little more complex. Well, it's actually not really a complex issue because you were talking about 2/3 of the big fires are really actually grass and brush. And let's say, okay, you have a collaborative come in and then you burn the grass and brush. What happens next year, Captain Bill?
Right. Well, here's the thing about fire. Okay. First of all, most of them are grass and brush, 2/3. Most of the deaths that we see come from grass and brush fires, not forest fires. I mean, if you look at just the Paradise Fire, the campfire, 86 people dead. That's more than all the forest fires in the last 10 years put together. We didn't see that many people dead in those forest fires. And then you look at the economic damages. The economic damages just from the direct fire are billions. And then from the smoke inhalation, the toxins in the smoke, and I don't mean carbon monoxide. I'm talking about toxins. UCLA said that, you know, we got 5,000 people dying prematurely every year from toxins and wildfire smoke from the 2/3 of the fires, which are grass and brush. And so the question is what causes the it's obviously the collapsed herbivory. Dr. William Ripple said.
And by the way, what's an herbivory for people who don't know? People may not even know what we're talking about here, Bill.
Yeah, I know. You're right, probably. Herbivory are critters that eat grass and brush or vegetation. So, and an herbivory can consist, what's interesting is it can be rabbits, deer, elk, herbaceous insects that eat grass and brush, like locust plagues or crickets or you know, cows, sheep, and horses all eat grass and brush. And of course, the horses will eat a much wider variety of flora than we see with domestics. I mean, they'll eat mistletoe and poison oak and all kinds of other brush.
Yikes.
But the point,
good
the
for
point
them.
Is that, yeah, but climate does have an impact. When you have prodigious fuel that's no longer grazed, it's stacked up out there, and it keeps building up, and I'm going to answer your question in 1 second here. What happens is when you have a longer, drier, hotter summer, then all of that fuel becomes available for the first source of ignition, and boy, when it goes off, it's like rocket fuel. So, but you know, when we look at the situation about the grass and brush and people who want to burn it, prescribed burn does not scale. I mean, I don't care what you call it. You can call it cultural. You can call it whatever. It does not scale. We have about 300 million acres of various areas with grass and brush fuels, which are the key fuels in these, a lot of these fires, most of the fires. And the thing is you can't burn that many acres. And then the other thing I was talking with Representative Cor Boyce about, I mean, he likes logging. I get it. He's got loggers in his constituency.
Sure.
But
yeah.
When you, last year, I mean, I remember telling everybody, you probably remember my emails about Senate Bill 762 4 years ago, and I said, this isn't going to do anything. In fact, fires will get worse year over year. And, of course, last year was your worst year ever. 1.9 million acres torched, gone. And when you burn off a forest, then the first thing that comes back is more grass and brush. So you're actually every year increasing the level of grass and brush you have on your landscape, and there's no way they're going to address it with prescribed fire. It's just not practicable. And on top of that, we know from UCLA's 10-year study that the smoke from additional fire, and I don't care if it comes from wildfire or whatever, the smoke is killing people prematurely, and the economic damage that they pointed out from their 10-year study just in California was $435 billion in economic damage from the deaths of these 50,000.
Bill, I concur with you. I've known people who have gotten sick and stayed sick, around here in Southern Oregon after summer fires, in which we didn't have fires necessarily in Jackson County or Josephine County necessarily, but the smoke coming in from Canada, the smoke coming in, elsewhere, it happens. It's a long-term systemic problem that we're dealing with. And like I said, I've been concerned about this whole push that we're going to do collaborative burning and bill the taxpayer, and then that's going to take care of the wildfire issue. I think it has its place to putting prescribed fire on the land, especially in certain areas around the urban, the wildland urban interface areas, the watersheds, things like that, and that makes a certain amount of sense. But you're not going to be able to treat it all. There is not enough money and not enough burn and not enough clean air to treat it all. That's our bottom line,
yeah,
isn't it, Bill?
I mean, we're looking at about a 1%. So the solution is to look at what happened in California back in 1917.
And this is interesting, Bill. We're going back a little over 100 years ago, and we had a collapsed herbivory. In other words, a lot of the deer and elk and things like that had just vanished then. And it must have been, due to hunting and various other issues in those days? Is that what happened?
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was overhunted, yeah.
What happened then in 1917? What did the state of California do then?
Well, in 1917, when the deer population reached 500,000 deer, they had a moratorium on hunting for 10 years. And then in those 10 years the moratorium was in place, the deer population came back to over 2 million again. And then they reinstated hunting in 1927. So 10 years it took with no hunting in California to get back about 2 million deer roughly. So, and here we are today, and that graph I sent you shows that. That's an accurate graph of what went on, as well as the number of bucks that were taken. but today, here we are. We're actually below 400,000 deer in California. So we're lower. We've got passed right through that in the stock market. They would call that a correction barrier or whatever. We've busted all the way through 500,000. We're down below 400,000 deer. And they haven't created a moratorium yet so these animals can come back. And what's worse today is now we have this explosion of chronic wasting disease. Oregon's in the same boat, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Oregon's
chronic wasting, big deal. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. Oregon's deer are collapsed. Their elk collapsed. Mule deer collapsed. So on top of it, now we have this rampage. And the reason we have that is interesting because we've killed off the predators. And I'm not saying that, you know, I understand the complexities with livestock production, obviously. But the problem with killing off all the predators is people don't realize lions, bears, wolves, coyotes, they can eat an infected deer. In fact, they take them out of the population before they spread the disease because they're a little dingy when they first get chronic wasting. And they take them out before they spread the disease in the whole herd. They can eat the infected deer, and then they don't spread it. They're immune to it. Horses are also resistant to chronic wasting disease. They don't get it.
Because it's kind of like a prion disease, isn't it, if I recall correctly?
Correct. It is a prion disease, correct. Yeah. So it's not a bacteria. It's not a virus. So it spreads the vector, according to Dr. Mark Zabella at the Prion Research Center, is the vegetation. So by having animals out there that not only take the sick animals immediately before they can spread it, but having the grazing by the horses, which don't get it, they can eat the vector, which is where the disease comes from. They can eat it and they don't get sick, so they manage it. And it's dose related. So it's a complex thing, but it's all about Mother Nature's balance. She had this thing balanced so beautifully. And what's going on is with our hubris and our greed, you know, we're focused on forest fires, which is not, that's not the big leak in the boat. That's the 1-inch hole in the boat where water's coming in. Yeah, it's coming in. It's not a good thing. But the 3-inch hole in the boat is the grass and brush fires. And how do we address those? See, that's,
And if you have more deer, elk, and other animals on the land eating that, you will naturally restore some balance then to that grassland issue here that tends to catch on fire. We burn it every year.
Yeah, the benefits of it are amazing because then when we have a fire, it burns low and slow. When firefighters are out there fighting the fire, it isn't as dangerous for them. We end up with less smoke. When you're managing the forest for timber harvest, which is a really good way to manage forests, is to do it for timber harvest. That's a sustainable industry. It's less dangerous for loggers out there. I mean, everybody, when you have the grass and brush under control, everybody benefits. Homeowners, the firefighters benefit. I mean, during the Klamathon fire down here, we had a little stretch along Camp Creek. When the wind changed, I was down there talking to the commander who was from Fresno. I said, you know, we're going to have an afternoon wind shift, adiabatic winds here in the in the mountains. And I said, it'll blow from the east to the west for a few hours. And so we did a little back burn. And when it went backwards on that little 1 mile strip, it burned low and slow because the horses had grazed all this fuel out in here. Well, not only do we have the big fire breaks that help provide a barrier so the fire couldn't get into the monument, it would spot over into this low fuel and just burn little black circles in the low grass areas and then go out.
All right. So, I mean, it makes sense. You know, you're taking care of it with nature's lawnmowers and not just horses, but all. So do you think that we are overdue then for a hunting moratorium in Oregon and California in order to bring these populations back and have them eating the grass? Or is too much of the grass close to to developed areas and maybe it wouldn't matter? I don't know. I'm trying to talk both sides of this.
Yeah, defensible spaces don't work. We saw that in Alameda fire. It jumped over entire orchards, you know, as grass and brush, wind-driven fire. Defensible landscapes do work. When you have a defensible landscape around your defensible space, that is the golden combination because you don't have a heat front coming in on you that's 300 degrees, you know, from a fire that's 200 yards away. You know, the thing is that we can do this, and we're going to have, you know, the fish and game guys are going to have the will, and they're going to have to be less greedy. You know, I think in California, they would sell deer tags if there was two deer left in the state because they're not only their hubris, their greed. I mean, they're trucking fish up here and dropping them into streams and not telling anybody how they got up the river. They didn't get up the river. They are trucking them in, but they're not honest. They lie by omission. They let everybody's imagination try to figure out how did those spawners end up in the tributaries of the Klamath River. They wouldn't say that they swam up the river. They just said, oh, look, they're in the tributaries. They didn't. But I've seen the truck.
Well, that's why I call the magic fish, right? Magic fish that made it through. But we don't want to get off into the weeds here, no pun intended here. No. All right, so do you believe, though, that Oregon and California would be willing to take the pain of something like that? Because a lot of people live for the hunt. I get it, and I understand where they're coming from.
Sure, and I hung up my rifle 20 years ago when I saw what happened. I think the hunters need to be responsible and make a, you know, put on the big boy pants and decide what are we going to do. We can hunt them down to zero and then sell our rifles. Okay, that's the option A. Or option B, we can put on our big boy pants and say, okay, we've got to wait and let these babies breed back so that we've got a reasonable population where we can have a buck harvest again that makes sense. Because the other problem we have going on right now, Bill, is the kids come up here from the valley, they shoot the champion breeders, the big racks that you want breeding your does, and the little scrub, little forkhorns are breeding. We don't know if they're disease resistant. We don't know anything about these guys. They're not a proven commodity. So we're reverse engineering by way of harvest. You know, the farmer doesn't shoot the prize bull when he needs. Yeah, the prize bull looks great. Probably has some great steaks.
Sure.
He doesn't shoot him to get the meat. He goes out and shoots the steer. So the bottom line is not only are we managing for a collapse right now, we're in the collapse, but we're when we do hunt, we have to hunt more intelligently. And we just can't, you know, we just can't let people go out there, because we also have now, of course, a lot of poaching and chronic wasting. We have more highways and roads than we did back in 1917. So that's taking a toll. And so we're going to have to, like, man up, and the hunters are going to have to say, okay, we're going to have to do the hard thing. And that takes, you know,
it's a sacrifice for the future that you see. Not only do you bring back a healthier herbivory population there, you have the side effect, which is very pleasant, in which more of nature's brush and weeds and all the stuff which is setting off some really catastrophic fires gets taken out naturally.
Well, there's even a better side effect to that people don't think about, that when you have a proper population of deer and elk, the wolves, the coyotes, and the bears are eating those and not people's livestock anymore. They're not eating people's pets anymore because their prey is now at the proper balance. See, they're going to find, these big apex predators are going to find a meal, whether it's your pet or your sheep or your lamb or your calf, mm-hmm. whatever. They're going to find a meal. So when you do the right thing for these prey animals, the deer and the elk, you also have all kinds of other tertiary benefits to benefit the livestock industry. It's going to benefit the timber industry so we don't destroy entire forests. I mean, it's pretty hard to have sustainable timber harvest when the entire forest gets burned to the ground because the fuel load was too high and the fire-resistant conifers couldn't handle it. That's an alarm bell right there. When you have a fire-resistant conifer or fire-evolved conifer that needs fire to reproduce, and the fires are killing those, you got to, like, scratch your head and go, all right, what's changed? Well, what's changed is the amount of heat, and the amount of heat is a function of the fuel, and the fuel is a function of the loss of our herbivore.
All right. That's a good way to wrap it. And thanks for opening up the conversation. I don't know if a lot of people or if everybody will agree with you. I imagine not. But we'll talk about that. Okay, we'll keep that up. And I'll put up the information that you sent me detailing what the state of California did in response to similar conditions that we have right now when it comes to herbivory. Okay? Thank you so much, Captain
Bill.
Thank you, Bill. All right, be well.
Yep. These amazing deals.
I'm saving big.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Let me go to Steve. Steve, you wanted to comment on the, I know you caught a little bit earlier, but, you know, the herbivory. I was talking with Captain Bill about that and saying that, hey, you know, the grass eaters are down way low, and we're going to need at some point to do what we did 100 years ago and do a hunting moratorium to build these herds back up, and we'll have also a better chance of getting the grass and brush knocked down on a regular basis. What do you think about that?
Well, the initial problem began even farther back. It started during the gold rush because they had thousands of miners here, many of them Chinese that they brought in, and to feed them, they had hunting parties that went out and actually wiped out the native elk population in the Rogue Valley area, and they killed off much of the deer and anything else that they could get, because that was one of the sources, you know, they needed the meat to feed the gold miners.
I understand that. Yeah, sure. But on the other hand, we kind of ate the seed corn in some ways when it comes to nature's lawnmowers.
The deer population came back. I remember back in the 1960s, I was a teenager and I was out hunting with my dad. We started out bow hunting. You could go up into the edge of the snow, and there were so many deer, you'd lose all your arrows. I mean, it was crazy.
Wow.
And then they reintroduced the elk, and it seemed like when they started letting people hunt elk, the deer population went down. And I'm not quite sure what.
You know, I might have to talk to an ODF&W person someday and get them on. And, like, you know, I'm not an outdoors or, you know, a wildlife biologist of any sort. I'd be interested in what they might have to say about something like this. But I think Bill makes an interesting point that is worthy of conversation, if nothing else. I mean, just talking common sense, all right? Thanks for the call, Steve. Let me go to, is this Jeannie? Or what was your name again, man?
Jeannie.
Okay, yeah.
Jeannie.
Yeah, and you were talking about Tillamook Burn and things like that back in the days, and something that we also did differently.
I was raised on a ranch.
Mm-hmm.
My dad put his cattle from May to September. They roamed the woods. He had two herds of sheep. They roamed the woods in the summertime. We had no fires. The only fire my mother used to talk about was all in her voice, and I finally found out what it was. It was 1933, the year I was born. It was a Tillamook burn. And we had no forest fires.
But it sounds like you're in support of putting more animals on those lands, right?
Yes. We did it from May to October.
Right when it's growing, keep it all mowed down. Thanks for the call, Jeannie. 19 before 9, KMED 99.3 KPXG. Now, Randall has been holding on, you know, from Advanced Air, because he's part of Open for Business today when we talk with locally owned and operated businesses. We can't do anything about the herbivory, but we can certainly get your HVAC working okay, right, Randall? Welcome back to the show.
Bill. Thanks for having me.
Hey, what is going on over there right now? By the way, if you need something looked at, we're almost getting into air conditioning season. Not quite. Looks like we have a little more of winter left here, at least for the next few days. But you know what happens, Randall? Every year we talk about this, they flip it over to air conditioning, and then, boom, explodes, and then they're calling you right away for service, right?
Yeah, and it's inevitable. I feel like a prophet this time of year, but guess what? It's going to be 105 degrees soon. It will happen.
Yeah.
And don't wait for that day or that week to turn on your air conditioner for the first time. You know, once we start getting into the 75-degree, 80-degree weather, it's a good idea to turn on your AC, turn on your heat pump into cooling mode, make sure that everything is working properly.
And even make sure that switchover valve, I forget what that's called, but it's a reversing valve or something?
Yeah, your reversing valve, yep.
Mm-hmm. And because there was one year I had mine stuck in heating, you know?
And it happens. Yeah. And the problem is if you wait until extreme heat extreme heat when you're in the cooling season, well, then that's when everybody is having the same problem, and there's just not enough HVAC contractors to get to everybody in the desirable amount of time. So be proactive. Turn on your air conditioning, your cooling before you need it. You know, you want to be warm enough to where you're actually – you know, have a set point that's lower than the outside air temperature. Otherwise, it can be hard on your equipment. But, you know, get it running through its paces and where it's not working real hard and the demand isn't super great, and make sure that you're easing your way into summer.
Makes a lot of sense there. And once again, if you need to get in touch with Randall and you do need service and you want to look at maybe a new system here, and by the way, you are a authorized Bryant dealer, right? That's what
that's
you do?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Factory authorized Bryant dealer, which is the highest level of accreditation that Bryant provides, and there's a satisfaction guarantee on new equipment, so that's a great peace of mind element for those that are looking to make a big investment. So encourage you to look into that. There's some incredible rebates. Right now we're in a shoulder season, a slower season, so the manufacturers have some rebates up to about $1,000 from Bryant. There's an in-house rebate that Advanced Air offers on qualifying Bryant mm-hmm. equipment, which is another $1,000. And then there's just some incredible Energy Trust of Oregon rebates right now. I know there's a savings within reach up to $4,000. There's a...
Boy, now, you could get $4,000 from Energy Trust. How does that work? I mean, that is a huge check. That's a huge rebate.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. So the Energy Trust of Oregon rebates, there's several of them that are HVAC related, and you can go to energytrust.org and click on their residential program. programs to find out more about not just the HVAC, but all of the programs that they offer. Some of them are income-based, and the Savings Within Reach program is indeed income-based, and it's up to $4,000 on qualifying equipment. But there's also up to $4,000 on a new heat pump for a manufactured home. There's up to $1,600 for property owners that have rentals that are upgrading their heating system. There's up to $1,600 back on new gas furnaces. So there's several different rebates available through the Energy Trust of Oregon. And then there's also other rebates coming online through the Inflation Reduction Act and some other.
Yeah, some of that stuff, which has still been out there. Hey, I have to ask you about that. How much was that for a new gas furnace, you said?
Up to $1,600.
Okay, well, see, you know, if you're in Ashland, that would help take some of the sting out of, you know, Ashland's anti-natural gas stance, if you wanted to put that. Yeah, all right. You're saying you don't want me to have a natural gas furnace? Watch me, yeah. All right? Hold my beer.
Well, and then, like, even in the case of the city of Ashland, I believe that right now they have a heat pump, a municipal heat pump rebate available as well. So there's some smaller, like municipal type of rebates out there as well. So there's and a lot of this is funded through the Inflation Reduction Act, and a lot of the manufacturers are getting equipment and systems that are lined up to qualify for that. So there's a lot of savings about that. And you want to partner with a contractor that is educating you and can help facilitate that process, because there's thousands of dollars in savings on replacement HVAC systems right now.
And you can help them out with that. You just call 772-6866. That's also where you can go for service 24/7. And myadvancedair.com, and you talk about all the rebates and get things designed up. Hey, I have to ask you, when's the last time you changed your filter? Because I did mine about 3 weeks ago. I could not believe how stuffed they were, and I had changed them maybe 45 days ago, and you know, the filter said, you know, good for 90 days is what it said, 90-day filter on there. Man, it was not the case at all. I couldn't believe how choked they were. What's going on?
I know. I just changed mine this week as well, and they were nasty. I think I got distracted, you know, through the holidays and everything, and so it's probably been at least 2 months, probably 3 months since I've changed ours. We have a couple of dogs. We got 5 children and all of that. So it was all in the filters. So, yeah, we got ours changed. You know, there's nothing more important that you can do to ensure the longevity of your equipment than simply changing your filters. Filters have everything to do with airflow, and as they become dirty, it restricts air, and it can take out a compressor, because the compressor is trying to draw air through the system, and if it can't suck the air through the system, then you're going to have mechanical problems. And, you know, your compressor is very likely the most expensive part of your system, and once that goes down, I mean, you could be in at least a couple grand in getting that fixed. So change your filters. You know, it's maintenance season for us. We're scheduling our existing Comfort Club members right now for cooling season. Give us a call. We're happy to at 541-772-6866. We're happy to come out and do a comprehensive inspection and maintenance. We make sure your filters are clean. We make sure that your lube and your belts are all adequate. We make sure that there's no electrical problems. Sometimes, you know, electrical shorts develop. We're doing all of those things and more to make sure that you're online and ready for cooling season.
Man, glad you're out there. I know the one thing that I figured out here, you might laugh at this, Randall. I have figured out that there's a specific type of whistle that I hear from my HVAC when the filters are starting to get clogged up. And when I start hearing that whistle now, it's just like, okay, now I know what that is. And you go over and then you find out that it's absolutely choked. It's just amazing. But
sometimes it's evident, too, if you look up in there and your filter is, like, crushed up into the return air cabinet.
Yeah.
Indicating that it's gotten so dirty and the suction is so great that damage is occurring, potentially, to your equipment.
Darn straight. And so we try to avoid that. And Randall, of course, and his people will certainly help you, your friend in this business here. That's myadvancedair.com. Advanced Air, Randall, 772-6866, 24/7. Tons of rebates, all this sort of stuff. Yeah. This is like they said that. Oh, before you take off, one more quick question. Yeah. Are the tariffs doing anything to HVAC? to the HVAC world?
Yeah, great question, Bill. Yeah, a lot of our materials, we deal a lot with copper. We deal a lot with aluminum, sheet metal. We deal with a lot of these materials. And yes, it is having at least a short-term impact.
Okay.
And that still hasn't been fully felt yet. We're still waiting to hear from our distributors on where some of this pricing is going. But I did see about a 7% price increase that was tariff-related on fireplaces, on my gas insert fireplaces the other day. And then there is others coming. We're in the midst of this refrigerant changeover, going from 410A to R454B. This is disruptive for our industry. We're seeing a lot of gaps in the because they're phasing out all of the 410 refrigerant and the equipment that's associated with that. And as that phases out, they're bringing in new refrigerant and new equipment for that refrigerant, the 454B. And it's disruptive because as the inventory of the 410, they wait for the inventory of the 410 to diminish before they release all of the new stuff into the market.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And so we're seeing some lineup problems, some matchup problems. So don't wait until summer if you need to replace your system, because there could be delays.
Yeah, right now, good time to do that. 772-6866, myadvancedair.com. Thanks, Randall. We'll have you back, okay?
Yeah, thank
be
you.
Be well. 851 at KMED.
Hi, it's John at Wellburn's Weapons. The only thing better than...
.com.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Hey, 854 and change. Hey, some breaking news got from Kevin Starrett, and he tells me Measure 114 has been upheld. In other words, it has been upheld and ruled constitutional in the Oregon courts. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know where to go on this, but that shows you what a problem we have in the Oregon judiciary, in which gee, you have to have a permit, but you can't have the class that you need to get the permit. I'll talk more with him about that. I imagine Kevin will have time to talk with Lars a little bit later. It's just a shocking development on the Second Amendment, okay? And that's going to be a topic of discussion, that and so much more, at this Saturday's Patriot Conference. And we have Holly Morton here from Josephine County, Josephine County Republican Party Chair. Watch breakdown here. I'll be speaking there this Saturday on some issues, and I certainly have a few things on my mind. What about you, Holly? Welcome back.
Good morning, Bill. Yeah, we're looking forward to you opening things up in the morning. And we've got some phenomenal speakers. Karen England is going to be talking about education. She's been going all over the country. She's coming from Tennessee to talk to us about how to get the school boards and the schools back on the track. She's a phenomenal woman, and anybody who's interested in education should try to make that. And then Dr. Robert Marbot, who actually is works with Donald Trump on homelessness issues and the fentanyl issues.
Yeah, I've interviewed him several times. He's with the Discovery Institute, right?
He is a phenomenal guy. We're really excited to have him in town. And Stephen Jonkis will be talking about it. I'm sure 114 is going to come up with him, but the legal issues, the tyranny in Oregon that we're experiencing legally, and then Nathan French from Nathan French Ministries out of Seattle will wind things up about, you know, just how we can bring America back the way we need it to be. It's going to be not one that anybody's going to want to miss. It's going to be a phenomenal conference.
Okay, and how do they get the tickets for this, Holly?
Sorry?
How do they get the tickets for this, Holly?
Okay, they can either come to the door, which is fine at this point. They can come into the office at 513 Northeast 6th Street, right across from the courthouse, or they can call 541-295-8100. That's our office number, and they can get them over the phone with a credit card.
And what's the cost for the Patriot Conference?
Students, 20. General population, 35, and VIP, 50. So we're making it inexpensive. We want, and we do have a limited number of comp tickets for people who just cannot do those things.
Okay. I know that you've done great work, and a lot of good people show up there. It's well attended, too. It's going to be, it's not a party per se, but it's kind of like learning at a party, I guess. It would be a good way, education and learning about it, and kind of gathering together with fellow conservatives, right? That's really what this is all about.
It's a Patriots gathering. We do them once a year. They're very exciting. You get to meet unbelievable people. You know, all of the legislators, Noah Robinson will be there. Dwayne Junker will be there, all the city personnel, county personnel. Mm-hmm. So it's a place, it's the who's who of the Patriots.
Josephine County Fairgrounds, and what time does that start on Saturday again?
It starts at 9 and it goes to 4.
So all right.
It's an all day thing. You can call if you want to get the in fact, on our website at joco.gop.org, you can get the schedule if you want to see who's going when, if you can't make the all day, but you're not going to want to miss a minute of it. It's going to be great.
All right. Thank you very much, Holly. Great talking as always, and we'll catch you on Saturday for sure. Okay. Thank you.
Bill. Take care.
All right. 8:58 and change, and we're going to wrap it up here because Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins will be here, and hey, we'll be back tomorrow for Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Something tells me we're going to be loaded up with Bear, especially with his Measure 114 decision coming out.
This is an emergency alert from Jackson County Emergency.